Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of MetCast, the podcast of Manchester Metropolitan University. In our latest series of episodes, we're taking a look at the Winter Olympics and exploring how expertise and research from Manchester Metropolitan University's Institute of Sport is influencing sporting performance and supporting healthy living. In this episode, I'll be joined by Sarah Collins, Senior Lecturer in Fashion Design and Technology. We'll be taking a look at the different sports apparel that athletes will be wearing at the Games, the designs, styles and fashions, and how this technical clothing can help performance. Let's get started. Welcome, Sarah, and thank you for joining us for this episode of MetCast. I wondered if, firstly, you could tell us about the types of design features that are commonly found in winter sports apparel that we will be seeing the athletes wearing at the Winter Olympic Games.
Yeah, well, I think obviously there's a wide range of sports, but the one thing that they do have in common is that they're all played in a similar environment, I guess, which is a colder environment. So I think things like sort of thermoregulating that keep fabrics that can keep the body cool, because obviously you're still exercising, you're still performing. So, you know, there is the chance that your temperature is going to be raised. But also, you know, if the climate is very cold, it also keeps you warm as well. Fabrics that are breathable, really common across all sportswear, but still apply to winter sports as well. Obviously, anything in the snow or adverse weather conditions can benefit from being like waterproof or water resistant. And then I guess there's other types of fabric that allow for movement as well. So focusing specifically, I guess, on the athlete and what the body is doing, there are quite a few sports that necessitate you to be able to have extended reach or, you know, rotate your shoulders, rotate your elbows, your knees. So building in kind of that freedom of movement can be done through either using specific fabric types or, I guess, through the construction. So the way that you will cut the pattern pieces for the garments. So you might put like articulation into some of those areas so that you are kind of aiding the bending or the stretching or the reaching of the body in action.
Can you tell us a little bit more about those kind of adaptations? Would it be taking bits out to give more movement for those particular wearers?
Yeah, I guess it can come down to quite a sport-specific level. If you look at a sport like speed skating, where the body is doing the same sort of like repetitive movements, that might be done through having a stretch fabrication, because you don't want to add a lot of things in, because obviously then the drag and the aerodynamics is lost. So you're trying to replicate the kind of the natural outline, the natural shape of the body. So having something really, really close fitting for that is really, really essential. Whereas I guess a sport like snowboarding that has reach and extension, particularly if you're doing like tricks and jumps, that might be adding in more fabric so that actually you've got some, you know, when you bend your elbows or you bend your legs, the fabric and the way the garment is constructed allows that movement to happen. So that might be about adding more in. And also, I guess, thinking about things like snowboarding or any other sport that has the potential to have an impact if you fall, some of those areas like knees, elbows, might be reinforced with some padding as well to kind of cushion that fall and protect the body to some extent.
I presume for like some of the other sports, so like skiing, snowboarding, presumably the choice of material or fabric is important. Would they need to be like warm, waterproof, you know, for the conditions that the sport is being played in?
Yeah, probably all of those. So if you look at like professional sort of ski wear, it's usually built up out of a number of layers. So you would have a base layer that insulates the body, but is also sort of breathable so that perspiration can work its way through, can wick its way through and doesn't sit next to the skin. And then the very outer layer, the shell layer, is quite often where you would want the waterproofing, because that's the bit that's in contact with the environment. So there's, I guess, different ways of building up outfits for sports like skiing and snowboarding. Obviously, I guess at such an elite athlete level, it might be that you're not out for 6 hours. You know, you're in and out. So the functionality, I guess, could be adapted or reduced or changed from what is commercially available. But I think all of these things are considered within that design process. So it becomes not just about the aesthetic and what does a garment look like, but also who's wearing it, what do they need that garment to do, and how you might build functionality into that garment through the fabrics, through the fit, through the construction of that garment as well.
So I guess the functionality is quite an important aspect of the design process then, in thinking about what that wearer is going to need.
Yeah, and I think as a designer, that's inherent in the process right from the beginning. So it's about understanding the user or the consumer of that garment, because if something looks aesthetically beautiful, if it doesn't perform and it doesn't do what that user needs it to do, it becomes a bit redundant. So thinking about who's going to be wearing it, what they're going to be doing in that garment, and the environment that they'll be in whilst they're doing that activity or that sport is really, really fundamental to the process.
Yeah, that's really interesting to think about what the wearer will be doing in that garment. And I wonder whether the design and functionality can have an impact on the performance of the wearer.
I think it's really difficult to say from a design point of view. I think as a designer, we would love it to have a massive impact and to really affect that performance. But I guess from a user's perspective, like an athlete, perspective, you know, they've done all of that training, you know, for their sport, and I think there might be a bit of hesitancy to credit the garment with too much. You know, they put in the training, and I guess as a designer and a user, you want those garments to be comfortable enough, you know, or allow that sort of range of movement, allow them to be really aerodynamic, or, you know, to cushion a fall or make them feel a bit like a warrior if they're playing ice hockey, without sort of the distraction of those garments. So maybe it's more about supporting, you know, the Winter Olympians in doing their sport rather than giving the garments all of the credit, which as a designer is what you'd like to do.
Yeah, of course. I wonder if, just going back a little bit, thinking about the kind of adaptations and the different variety of sports, like the more high impact sports compared to like low impact, what kind of examples are there of what tweaks could be made to ensure there's less risk of injuries with the more high impact sports? Like, how do they differ?
Yeah, I mean, I guess something like ice hockey, which is quite notoriously impactful, will have like specific protective equipment that is worn underneath the team jerseys that they will play to protect the players, I guess, in a similar way to like American football, because collisions are expected and quite high impact collisions. So that sort of protects certainly like the upper body within something like ice hockey. I think if you look at snowboarding, the protective elements are much more subtle. They're almost sort of like not noticed, and it might be simply putting in additional layers of padding or additional layers of fabric that will cushion a fall. Obviously, if you fall on powder snow, it doesn't hurt as much as if you fall on ice. So I think there's also like cultural kind of expectations as well. Like you wouldn't get a snowboarder who was completely padded up and protected, because it's just not part of that sport. You know, the garments that they wear, their kind of style, their aesthetic is quite specific to snowboarding. You know, it's quite closely aligned to what skaters would wear. You don't see them with enormous amounts of padding on. So I guess there's subtle differences even between the sports where you would require more kind of insulating, more protection for the body. But then there's some crazy sports, isn't there, as well, like the luge, like the kind of like skeleton bobsleighs, where you're hurtling along at like really high speeds with pretty much no protection at all, because you've just got a skin suit on, because actually the priority becomes aerodynamics and being, you know, the idea is to be as fast as possible. So you don't want lots and lots of padding. that makes your shape and silhouette bigger. So maybe it's a bit of a trade-off.
And you mentioned about the aesthetics being quite specific for certain sports. And I wonder if you could give a bit more insight into what differences we might find in how those garments will look for the various sports.
You know, the difference between like speed skating or certainly like figure skating, which is about sort of performance. You know, there's lots of sparkles, there's lots of sequins. Like those garments are very different from something like snowboarding, which is super sort of casual. Like it's a really different aesthetic, isn't it? Big sort of baggy clothes to something like ice hockey, which is much more kind of like branded. It's a team sport, obviously. So I guess the design aesthetic of each of those is really different. And I guess, you know, all of those are designs by sort of specialists within that area. It's unlikely that you'd be designing snowboarding things and I guess like figure skating outfits. So I think they are very specialised and they are very different, I guess. And what functions you would need those garments to have is really varied. The aesthetics of those garments are also really varied. You know, just the shapes and the silhouettes and the types of garments as well that the athletes would wear. But I guess the same sort of process applies, the same design process applies to all of them, is that you start with like the user and who's wearing them, what they're doing in them, where they're wearing them, and draw all of that information in as well.
And one thing I just wanted to ask, just to go back a little bit, just thinking about that process you mentioned, what kind of is the length of that process? Is that like quite a lengthy process that you go through, you know, to go through all that consideration, the design, the functionality, the aesthetics, before you kind of come up with that sort of output?
Yeah, it depends. From my time in the sportswear industry, and you know, it's notoriously quite long lead times, so sort of much slower, I guess, and a more in-depth process maybe than like fast fashion or, you know, like high street fashion, because there are other considerations within it. It might take more time to work with a factory to source fabric that is thermoregulating but also has stretch in it, and it also does, you know, performs other sort of functions that you want to do. Obviously, getting the fit exactly right can take a few sort of processes of sampling and fitting them on like models or users to get everything right. Quite often it involves working with a graphic designer as well. So you would have a designer who concentrates on the fit of a garment, the actual shape, the silhouette, the construction of it. But more often than not, you would probably work with a graphic designer who specialises in that kind of like 2D application of print or pattern, developing new logos and branding for those garments. So it can often involve quite a few different stakeholders, you know, from a design perspective, and also like an kind of external engagement with factories and specialist kind of manufacturers to get these garments finalised and finished to a really high standard.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of Metcast, the podcast of Manchester Metropolitan University. Your feedback is always welcome, as are much needed review ratings on iTunes. So if you have a moment, please head there to let us know what you think. You can subscribe to the podcast on your preferred podcast platform. That's all for now. Until next time, goodbye.